town, Chicago is.
The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference is coming to Chicago for its one and only 2019 conference. You can meet and hear Ross Douthat, Matt Harrison, Wesley Smith, Aaron Wolf, Hans Feeney, and Will Whedon Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
What's your name?
Jesus of Nazareth.
From the network that brought you the Bible.
It's a story of human possibility.
Comes the life of Jesus Christ.
Jesus was special. Jesus had a mission.
Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you.
From the people who were there.
Jesus' way of changing the world was through sacrifice.
I am the resurrection and the life.
If we want to understand Western history, we must understand the story of Jesus.
Jesus, His Life. Monday, March 25th on History.
That's a commercial for a series, Jesus, His Life, which debuted March 25th on the History Channel. Why are media outlets like the History Channel, Discovery Channel, there are others, why are they interested in Jesus? Many people have, well, he polls well. Everybody likes Jesus. He's a great teacher, perhaps a prophet. And Christians believe he's actually the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, the Savior of the world. But there's a big gap between the first two and that third thing. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, March the 29th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the History Channel series, Jesus, His Life. Dr. Craig Evans will be our guest. A little bit later, Dr. Brian Gurman joins us. We're going to remember Joseph the Patriarch, who will be remembered on the 31st of March. That's Joseph of the Son of Jacob fame, the last, well, almost the last third of the book of Genesis. Pastor Chris Roseborough joins us in hour two for This Week in Pop Christianity. Did Jesus expect Mary and Martha to heal Lazarus rather than wait for him to show up and raise him from the dead? Then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. It's a simple game we play with our listeners where we play four soundbites from this week's Issues Etc. audio. After we've played them, you give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, and you vote for which one you think ought to be Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Joining us to talk about the History Channel's series, Jesus, His Life, Dr. Craig Evans, Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence, and Fabricating Jesus, How Modern Scholars Distort the Gospels. Dr. Evans, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Why are media outlets like the History Channel interested in Jesus?
If they're interested in high ratings and profit, they ought to be. History Channel ran, you'll recall, almost exactly 6 years ago, Mark Burnett, Roma Downey's The Bible miniseries. It ran six consecutive Sunday nights in 2013 and set an all-time record. They had 100 million people watch all or part of the documentary. So, you don't have to be a genius to figure this out. And something that's done well, tastefully, respectfully, that's balanced, that talks about Jesus, is going to get a huge, huge audience. And I think they're going to have a winner this time around, too.
So far, how have they introduced and depicted Jesus of Nazareth?
It's a combination of theatrical performance, so it's a drama. You actually see characters acting out various key scenes, and I think they're very well done. The props are excellent. The actors on the whole are very good. I'm not thrilled with the person they've chosen to be Jesus. He strikes me as a little too fair-skinned, a little too preppy, a little too I'm still in high school, but that's just me. Maybe I'm getting old. Then they have scholars, talking heads, talking about whatever it is that's being depicted. And so it goes back and forth. I think it's a good balance. It's very well done. So you don't have to be a Bible scholar to follow it and know what's going on. And I've been watching it and taking notes, who's in it, who's speaking. I'll have a few comments about that. I've only picked up on two things that some of our listeners might find objectionable. But so far, and what has aired, I think it's pretty good.
This is hard to do because you're dealing with source material if you want to accurately depict the firsthand accounts. And that's, I think, exactly what the premise of this, from the people who were there, the firsthand accounts of these things. And to put that into 21st century television, that's a pretty hard task, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. And I was a consultant for the program that Mark Burnett and Roma Downey did 6 years ago that I've already mentioned. And that was constantly a problem because we were trying to do the whole Bible and trying to take what never was intended for a television screen, trying to take written text. And sometimes it isn't even narrative. It's didactic material. It's psalms, praise, poetry, and so on, prophecy. And then trying to depict that on the screen was very challenging. I think this is going to be a little easier because what they're doing is they're taking the New Testament Gospels. So they're not like doing Paul's letters. They're not trying to do the oracles of Isaiah. They're just doing the Gospels. So that should make it a lot simpler. One of the things I picked up on that I thought was interesting that we didn't do 6 years ago is you actually have the thoughts of the characters. And especially noticeable, you hear the thinking of John the Baptist. He sees Jesus and he thinks about him at the Jordan River. He's in prison. He's been arrested by the Tetrarch Herod Antipas. And he's thinking things. And I found that rather interesting. And so by reading his mind, as it were, there are what originally were comments, editorial remarks made in passing by the evangelist, get to be, you know, expressed by the character during the scene. And I think that's very effective.
So you said you have been kind of paying attention to the talking heads, in, to use your words, that are brought in to kind of documentary on the visual narrative. Who so far have they been calling on that you have found to be remarkable in one way or another?
Well, no one, actually. That's the interesting thing. It's a rather bland team, and I don't mean this as an insult to anybody. They're all capable people. But in my own experience, I've been a talking head in almost 100 documentaries and news programs, and there's always someone that's very fiery that has an opinion that just flies in the face of the consensus. There's always somebody who's a bit radical or whatever. There's none of that. There's one individual, he's the new editor of the Biblical Archaeology Society and the Biblical Archaeology Review, and that's Bob or Robert Cargill. It surprises me because he's known more as an Old Testament and ancient Near Eastern person. He seems to be, you know, he wears the skeptic's hat once in a while, but not often. Ben Witherington is well known. He's been in many documentaries, and he seems to be the lead voice on the conservative side. But like I said, it's surprisingly bland in critical issues. Only two things have been raised with any skepticism, and it's exactly what you would expect. Was there really a census that would have led the Holy Family to return to Bethlehem just in time for Jesus to be born? And was there really a slaughter of the newborns, the innocents, that's recorded in Matthew's gospel, where Herod the Great, in a paroxysm of paranoia and fear, has these recent borns murdered? You expect people to raise questions about those two things simply because they're not documented in other sources. Other than that, it's like it's just paraphrasing and narrating the gospels and people chiming in and saying, I think this is what it means and this is why it's important. So I have to say I'm a little bit surprised.
So ordinarily, it sounds like you would expect to have a lot more kind of the skepticism expressed by the panels that are invited to comment on a series like this.
Yeah, I do. I mean, Todd, you could take a couple of comments that Cargill has made and delete them. And then this could be Christian Sunday school material. This could be, you know, distributed among the Lutheran churches, among the Southern Baptist churches, and nobody would raise their eyebrow. That's what surprises me about it. I mean, it's very tastefully done. It's well done. It's not vulgar. It's not extreme. It's not eccentric. There aren't any odd theories that are being trotted out. Either the acting, the drama part, or the talking heads that are kicking things around. I'm really surprised by that. Actually, I'm glad, because as a scholar, I don't tune into a program like that expecting to be stretched academically. I'm concerned about the lay audience out there that's watching it, and I think this is wonderful. So don't misunderstand me. I'm not putting this down. I'm saying I am just surprised that for a secular, you know, network and History Channel, they do all kinds of things. It's a very secular network. They're not trying to cater to the Christian church. Maybe they're catering to the general audience, but like I said, there's nothing really that's going to be objectionable here. So I hope a large audience does tune in, and especially secular people who don't know much about the Gospels or Jesus and that story. I hope a lot of people tune in and learn from it.
It's interesting. Do you think, given your experience in participating in these kind of endeavors, do you think maybe some lessons have been learned, at least maybe in the PR department, that, look, these things probably will garner a bigger audience if we just keep the skepticism to a minimum or the crazy ideas to a minimum?
You know, you're probably right. In my experience in these things, there's a lot of marketing research is done in advance. And a whole year before any of it even gets underway, they're making phone calls, they're contacting people, they'll have advisory groups that meet and talk. And I suspect they've done that. And, of course, this is the very network, History Channel, the very channel that aired Mark Burnett, Roma Downey's program, The Bible. And of course, you know, even though it was criticized by a few very conservative groups because it wasn't exactly according to the Bible as they thought, and these were criticisms I thought were a little bit over the top, they had such a huge audience. They owned Sunday night 5 Sundays in a row, the number one watched program. They set an all-time record for a program. I think it was only the Super Bowl that rivaled it for the year in having 100 million viewers. And so this can't be lost on History Channel. When somebody proposed this probably a couple years ago, I'm sure they said, you know, that's a good idea. Why don't we do it? And your point very likely was thought about. You know, let's not do anything crazy. Let's not be eccentric. Let's not be extra skeptical. Let's get some reasonable people who know what they're talking about and keep it mainstream, and I have a feeling we'll have a big audience. That's probably what they thought, and that's what's happening.
So you had mentioned those two issues, that some skepticism was raised in at least the first installment of this series, and that is the census itself. Why is it a legitimate question to ask, was there a census?
Well, it's a good question to ask because on the face of it, it sounds like something an emperor would do in the context of the Roman Empire. But, you know, and Cargill is the one that said, well, he says, I think that's a problem. I think Luke does this simply to get the Holy Family from Galilee down to Bethlehem. But I don't think that's a very critical reading. And Ben Witherington then commented, and he didn't agree. And he said there's no reason to raise doubts about that, and I side with Witherington on that. In the Gospel of Luke, the Holy Family goes down to Bethlehem. You get the impression every single year. You know, we have reason to believe that Nazareth was founded by people that came up from Bethlehem around 100 B.C., during the time when the Hasmoneans ruled Israel, and they wanted to re-Judaize, repopulate the north. And so it's very likely that Joseph and his family had property in Bethlehem. He probably had family and property. Maybe Mary did as well. They're both from the house of David. So the idea of going down there annually for financial reasons, family reasons, or whatever makes sense. So if there is a census, and a census is done in order to determine how to do taxes, it's like doing an inventory. And so it's very likely that Joseph would want to be there at that time to make sure they're not set up for being overtaxed, that there's no confusion that way. So he's protecting his own interests. So it makes good sense to me that with a census he would do that. The other thing, Todd, a lot of people don't realize that when Rome does a census, it doesn't just happen on a weekend. It doesn't just happen in a few days. It's a rolling activity that could take months, even years. And the other point that we need to make is we only have a fraction of the data from the past. And so you can't say that because we have no information, that becomes proof that it didn't happen. That's the wrong use of an argument from silence. So I side with Ben Witherington. He said there's no reason to think that there was no census, that Luke is simply making up a story in order to get the Holy Family down to Bethlehem.
What about the other point, and that is the slaughter of the innocents? Why is it legitimate to at least ask that question, either did this happen or what was the nature of the event?
Well, of course, it is always legitimate to ask questions. You know, did something like this happen? Could something like this happen? Well, Herod the Great has murdered three of his own sons in the last 3 years of his life. One of them he killed just a few days, about a week or so before he himself died. The man was paranoid. He was very worried about threats to his throne. And so the idea of killing a number of recent borns in the city of David, and of course Bethlehem would view it with grave misgivings, because that's where it was hoped the true king of Israel would arise, the real son of David. And so it's very plausible Herod is fully capable of doing something like that. And then why should we expect historians to write down an incident like that? Herod did those kinds of things. And so, again, we only have a few pieces of history, and a few of those pieces show up in the Gospels. And so I think it's a bit unfair to say that if something is recorded in one of the Gospels that's not recorded anywhere else, that somehow that's a vote against its historicity. Because we don't know. We may find something in all these papyri we continue to publish. We have several hundred thousand yet to go. It won't be finished in our lifetime. And there may well come to light information about a census at the turn of the era, information about barbaric acts of cruelty on the part of Herod the Great and others. So what right now is unattested, that could all change in the near future.
So by and large, you said you are hoping people will tune in and watch this. By and large, what's your general impression so far of the History Channel's Jesus, His Life?
Right now, I would give it a high grade. I'd somewhere between an A and an A-. I think that people who don't know the gospel story very well will definitely benefit from it. They will recognize some of the political and social things that are at work. You know, the gospels can be read, if you don't know the culture, they can be read in a very flat way. The characters don't have much life. You don't really know what's going on. Well, you watch this very colorful, very well acted, excellent props. You see these dynamics that are unfolding. You know, so far what we've mostly seen is Jesus' ministry just getting underway. It's mostly focused on John the Baptist, and of course before that, the birth narrative itself. And so you get a real good feeling of the politics of the times, the danger, how you don't cross someone like Herod the Great, how you don't criticize the Tetrarch, Herod Antipas. That's what John the Baptist did. He's calling him immoral. He's now involved with his former sister-in-law, and he is shouting about this in the streets and talking about how Herod must repent. If he doesn't, he'll be judged. And, of course, you see how that's acted out, and what might seem a little flat on the pages of the New Testament becomes pretty exciting, and you can realize, oh, man, no wonder they grabbed this guy and threw him in jail. And, of course, it concludes with Salome doing her dance, Herod in his drunk saying, I'll give you anything you want. She says, I want John's head on a platter. And they actually show that. I mean, it's pretty neat how they do it. So I think viewers are going to learn a lot about the Gospels, and I think on the whole, it's a plus.
With only about 30 seconds here, Dr. Evans, any red flags that viewers should be looking for in future episodes?
You know, I'm going to be really interested to see how they do miracles in Jesus' ministry, especially the raising of Lazarus. That's going to be interesting.
Dr. Craig Evans is Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and the Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University. He's author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence, and Fabricating Jesus, How Modern Scholars Distort the Gospels. You can purchase these books at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Evans, thank you.
Very welcome.
On the other side of the break, we'll be talking with Dr. Brian Gurman, Assistant Professor of Theology and Director of the Concordia Bible Institute, about Joseph the Patriarch. Joseph from the end of the book of Genesis. He's not really a big character in the course of the big names that we have, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, who is his father, but yet he is the focus of an awful lot of that first book of the Bible. We'll find out why after this.
Many patients are upset to learn that doctors don't take the Hippocratic Oath anymore.
National Review columnist Wesley Smith talking about his presentation at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That's a real shame because the Hippocratic Oath protects patient safety. The speech I will give at the conference will describe the consequences of violating Hippocratic values in healthcare and the things that can occur in the healthcare system if we move away from Hippocratic medicine to a more utilitarian bioethics.
You can meet and hear Wesley Smith making the case for the Hippocratic Oath at the one and only 2019 Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. Attendance is limited to 500. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Discover a truly Lutheran approach to education. Concordia University Chicago's Center for the Advancement of Lutheran Liberal Arts supports a vibrant, growing community of classical educators. Whether you're a teacher, administrator, parent, or homeschooler, we have the resources and contacts you need to start a child's journey into the Lutheran Liberal Arts. Visit cuchicago.edu/cala. That's C-A-L-L-A.